Hare Krishna, everybody. So, it's good to be back in Dallas. Guess what? I was actually here when Prabhupada installed Radha Kala Janji. That was quite a privilege. In September 1972, and Prabhupada had just come from New Vrindavan, where he gave these Bhagavad Dharma discourses, which just amazed scholars, politicians, who else came? Journalists. And then he came right here after that. Actually, he went to a mosque in Pittsburgh, because Pittsburgh's the nearest big city to New Vrindavan. And he saw a transcendental rock opera that the devotees were putting on. And he didn't really recognize the devotees in the play, because the devotees were all dressed up in these bizarre costumes. So at intermission, he leaned over to a senior devotee, Rupanuga, and he said, "Are those our men?" Because they were all dressed up in Merlin the Magician costumes and painted faces. And, "Oh yeah, there's Harikesh, there's Gaudi, there's Vishnujan, and there's Aja." Oh. And then Prabhupada, he got up and he left. I don't know if he knew the play wasn't over, but anyway, he let us do that. He let us do a rock opera because we came from the counterculture, and that was part of the counterculture. But it's really a privilege to be back in Dallas because I'm teaching for the last 6 years seminars about Prabhupada's position. It's called Srila Prabhupada, Our Founder Acharya, title, subtitle, Celebrating Srila Prabhupada's Unique Transcendental Position and Every Follower's, apostrophe S, Foundational Relationship with Him. Why am I doing this? Well, I was teaching once upon a time in Mayapur at the Mayapur Institute of Higher Education. Maybe you heard of it. So they offer Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhav, just what Prabhupada wanted. He wanted this to be an educational movement. That's the mission of ISKCON. If you look at the purposes of ISKCON that Prabhupada listed on July 13, 1966 at the incorporation of ISKCON at 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada boldly called it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. There was just a little hole in the wall. It was a little storefront. But Prabhupada said International Society. And he listed the first purpose as the systematic education of all peoples in the techniques of spiritual life. And all the seven purposes are directly or indirectly about education. I'd like to talk about that mission, because you know, we come here to the Gaudiya, we come to the temple, we sing and dance for the deities, the pleasure of the deities, and we take prasad, and we see our friends and families. Maybe we forget the actual mission of ISKCON. It's to wake up, it's to be educated, it's to go home, back to Godhead. So I'd like to talk a little about that. And today in this darshan room, I did teach a lesson called Finding Our Mission in His Mission. And it is a mission because human life is a mission. And that amazed us to hear Prabhupada say that. You can imagine this person who looked like, well, you couldn't really fathom what you were looking at when you saw Srila Prabhupada. He looked like the genie out of the bottle, or some far-out swami that maybe just got off a magic carpet. In fact, I told a story about when I saw Prabhupada in Dallas. That weekend he came to install Radha Kala Janji. He landed not in DFW, because DFW wasn't even built yet. He landed in Love Field. And what did we do? We ushered him into the VIP room for a press conference. And I may have told this when I was here in February, but I'll tell it again because it's so relishable. Prabhupada just walked into the room. They had a big makeshift vyasasan, just a little bare platform. He sort of hopped up on the seat, and then without any preliminary words, he didn't even say Hare Krishna. Prabhupada just said, "So there are three ways to fly." There are three, that's how he starts. There are three ways to fly. And I'm standing in the back next to a lady from the Dallas Morning News. And she gets her pad out. And I was glancing at her pad. 3 ways to fly. Okay, this is going to be the morning news, right? This is in the afternoon, you know, and she was the story for the next day. You know, before 24/7 news, social media, and all this stuff. So then Prabhupada said, so formerly yogis knew the art of dipping in the Ganges at Haridwar, and by vibrating mantra, they could travel instantly and emerge surface in Allahabad, Triveni, where they have Kumbh Mela every year. So that is mantra, travel by mantra. And the ladies, you know, beneath 3 ways to fly, she's writing mantra, mantra. How do they say it in Texas? Mantra. How do they say it? Something. They say mantra. Okay, good. So, and then Prabhupada said, and then there is pigeon. And I'm thinking, what? Pigeon. That's the word Prabhupada said. But if you read the Bhagavatam, there are certain species of extraterrestrial birds which can carry people in the air. Maybe another kind of magic carpet. Brahma himself, Lord Brahma, rides on a swan, right? So Prabhupada said, formerly they could train pigeons, and there is a word in the Bhagavatam, kapota, and it's a kind of bird. It's not like the pigeons, you know, in downtown. It's not like those guys. It's some special species of bird that they fly in formation, and you can sit on them and be carried from one place to another. So the lady's writing mantra, pigeon. And then Prabhupada said, and then there's machine. And then the lady raised her hand with her pencil, and she said, Swami, are these ways to fly, were they more efficient than today's 747 jumbo jets? And Prabhupada was ready for it. You know, he's ready for anything. He could answer anybody perfectly because he knew the intention behind the question, not just the words of the question. So he said, oh, yes. But one thing, there were no... And he leaned over, and Satsarup Maharaj was sitting right about there. And he said, how you say that, Satsarup? Jack highs? Hijacks, Prabhupada, hijacks. Yes, there were no hijacks. Now, hijacks had just started, the hijacking of a plane, because Prabhupada kept on the news to incorporate it into his preaching. And you know what had just happened that summer of 72? The Palestine Liberation Organization had snuck into the Olympic Village in Munich, Germany, and murdered all of the Israeli athletes. It was a big thing in the press. It was like a terrorist act before they called it that. There were no hijacks because these PLO guys had commandeered a plane and were trying to look for a safe haven so they could get away. But the lady was not about to be shut down so easily. So she said, well, Swami, if you know all these ways to fly, then why did you fly American Airlines today? She thought she had him, right? With American Airlines. Without missing a beat, Prabhupada said, to be one with you. And the lady was totally surprised and charmed. And she turned to me and she said, you know, I like that man. It was great. And then Prabhupada came, and you may know from the history, the stormy weekend that happened. It was, I don't mean weather, I'm talking about how Prabhupada came, and he found out immediately that an artist had repainted the deities. He had shipped the deities from India, as he often did, and someone, without consulting him, had repainted Kalachanji, and he was furious. He didn't want the deities repainted. He wanted them as they were. So he called the lady into his quarters, and he said, who has done this, or why did you do this? And she was just 19, 20-year-old girl. She just started crying, my god sister Janava. Well, Bharad Raj told me, Bharad Raj is one of the BBT artists, Bharad Raj told me, I am your spiritual master, I'm sitting right in front of you, and you're telling me Bharad Raj. This is nonsense. Shyam Sundar, pack our bags, we're leaving. We're not going to install these deities. These people are not ready, they don't understand. the role of the spiritual master. And then Satsrup Maharaj came in, and he wanted to pacify Prabhupada and explain more that she didn't know that that wasn't supposed to be done. And anyway, it's my fault, Srila Prabhupada, because I'm the GBC here for the Gurukula in Dallas. So Prabhupada, he kind of was pacified, and he let the show go on eventually. That was a short version, actually. It took, I think, at least 24 hours for us to get the word that the installation was back on. And then the installation day came. I think that was Friday. Yeah, Friday he flew in, and Sunday, I believe, was the installation. And before the installation, there was an initiation, and Prabhupada's sitting right about here. And this is in the days, you know, there was no Kalachanji's palace. This room was just a basketball court. That was all it was, if you know the history. With these pale green cinder blocks, you know. And so Prabhupada he's presiding over the initiation. And there's a priest doing the fire jugga. And Prajumna Prabhu is giving the names that Prabhupada had selected for the devotees to be initiated. And I saw Prabhupada's lips moving as he was observing the ceremony. And I wanted to hear what Prabhupada looked like he was singing. So I snuck up right around, say this is the Vyasasana, and I snuck up sort of off to the side and then back, and I cocked my ear. And Prabhupada was chanting Brahma Samhita, Dvaitam Archutam Anadi Anantarupam. He was just singing all the verses, and it was really sweet just to hear him do that. And then all of a sudden, during the initiation ceremony, he stopped the whole thing because something was wrong, and no one could really understand what was wrong or what Prabhupada wanted. So he was looking at his secretary, his GBC secretary, Shyam Sundar was there, and Satsup Maharaj was there as the GBC, and they didn't quite get it. And then he just started looking at all of us, like, do you know what I want? And then his glance fell upon me. I was sitting right about where Prabhuji is with the red t-shirt, with the red shirt, short-sleeve shirt. And he looked at me very sternly, like, do you know what I want? So what did I do? I was just a kid, you know, and I just started grinning because Prabhupada's looking at me, right? Oh, and he started, you know, grinning at him. And Prabhupada gave me this really disgusted look like, you're an idiot. But, you know, it was full of such compassion too. Whether Prabhupada was smiling or scolding, he was all about compassion. So he just looked at me, you're an idiot. You could never understand in a million years what I want. And I got the message, and I just started, it made me grin more. That's right, Srila Prabhupada, I'm an idiot. You love me, and I'm an idiot. Jai, Srila Prabhupada. You know, it was just, and he just looked away disgusted, and nobody knew what he wanted. So he just let the show go on, and people got initiated. And then he got off his seat after the initiation, and he went out the door. Not doors like this. I mean, really crude things. And then the conch blew and the curtains opened, and there's Srila Prabhupada on the stage, and he's going to do the inaugural arti. Wow! That was a real treat. We didn't expect Prabhupada to do that. But you have to understand what we saw on the stage. I don't know if you have pictures of this, but and the deities were hardly had anything on, just a few, I don't know, wraps or something. And then in back of them was the green cinder blocks had been covered by a white sheet. That was all it was. So this big, brawny, black, you know, Texas-sized deity, Kalachanji, just sort of jumped out at you from the white sheet background. And there's Srimati Radharani. And Prabhupada is doing Achman for the arti. And we're just riveted. How's Prabhupada going to do this arti? So to this day, whenever I have the opportunity to do arti, I always remember how Prabhupada did the arti. It's the one and only time I ever saw him offer arti to the deities, to Sri Sri Radha Kala Chanchi. And I'll tell you, he did it super meditatively, super slowly, and meticulously. all the movements of his hands and his, you know, how Prabhupada was so graceful and aristocratic in his movements. And then when it came time to offer the water, he offered the water and he did something we never saw before. He, instead of just pouring the water into the cup from the water conch, he stepped out into the front of the stage and he just started pouring the water from the water conch into his hand and he started flinging it out at all of us. And we all rushed up to the front and we started leaping up. I can sort of see it and feel it now in slow motion. We were all jumping up and catching the water in our mouths like little birds catching water in their beaks. And it was like the enactment. It was like of the first Gurvastakam. The spiritual master is receiving benediction from the ocean of mercy, just as the cloud pours water on the forest fire to extinguish it. So the spiritual master extinguishes the blazing fire of material existence. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. As we leapt up and caught those drops in our mouths, in our nose, in our eyes, in our head, we felt the purport of that stanza, Prabhupada just putting out the blazing fire of material existence. And that, my friends, is Prabhupada's mission. That is his mission, to end birth, death, old age and disease for us all, for everyone, if we follow him. He's the doctor. He's got the prescription. We simply have to take it. So finding our mission in his mission. So he has a mission, which he wrote about and spoke about so many times, whether he's incorporating ISKCON or writing his song to Krishna after the Jaladuta voyage or anything. It's a mission. It's not simply a club. Although, when he did those first initiations in New York City, the devotees hardly knew it was a mission. They thought it was just them and the Swami, and the cool Swami, right? So it was only after a few initiations that one of them went up to Prabhupada and said, "Hey, Swami, are there any rules to this club?" You know, they hardly knew what initiation meant. Prabhupada talked about rounds and he talked about disciplines, rules, but he didn't stress them because he knew we were animals, and for us to follow the disciplines of bhakti yoga, which qualify us to go back to Godhead, we had to get a higher taste. So have you heard those recordings from 1966? What is Prabhupada doing when he's not lecturing? What are the recordings of? Prabhupada singing. Right? And you hear Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and you hear the first newcomers, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. They're just trying to follow. They're trying to stay high forever. That was the motive they had, so that was the preaching. Stay high forever. No more drugs, no more come downs, no more up and down. So it's a mission. And then once we find that out, then it's incumbent upon all of us to discover, as the title of this lesson I taught said, finding our mission in his mission. Finding our mission in his mission. We have to have a mission too. And those missions are going to vary with according to our natures and according to our spirit. So how do we find out that mission? Just like I shared with the devotees this morning, that once I was taking a japa walk in Los Angeles. Anybody, have you been to New Dwarka in LA? Okay, so it's in a nice neighborhood, Culver City. It's called the Palms District, or palm trees. And I passed by this Christian church. And on the marquee, the pastor put up a preview of this Sunday's coming Sunday's sermon. And what did it say on the marquee? It said, "Your body is God's gift to you. And what you do with your body is your gift to God." Yes, that's good. So, but how do we find out what we're meant to do? Because in Kali Yuga, we're all kind of mixed up. We're not coming out of a Daiva Varnashram culture. We're coming out of a modern materialistic culture where all the, instead of samskaras, you know, samskaras, sacred impressions. Before you come into the womb, there's garbhadan samskar. After you leave this world, there's shraddha. At every step, the soul is being supported and helped and wished well. What do we have in modern culture? We don't have samskaras. We have some scars. We're scarred. We're scarred by the impressions left on our consciousness by all the modern media and the propaganda, is that we are matter, this body, and the purpose of life, the mission of life, is to try to exploit, control, and enjoy matter. That's what we're taught from day one, even in India now, even Mother India, the land of Dharma, the land of tapas, the land where Krishna chooses to appear when he comes, as he is. He comes all over the world in different forms and avatars. But when he comes to this world as he is, Vrijendra Nandan Krishna, he chooses to come to Tapabhumi, Bharatvarsh. But even in Bharatvarsh, the mission is scrambled. It's mixed up. I was in South India in 1993. I left Vrindavan to go with my family to South India to a mountain ashram in the Sayadri Mountains. And we had an ashram about halfway up this mountain. Is anybody here from Karnataka? Okay. Do you know Kollur?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm Bangalore.
Bangalore. Okay. So between Bangalore and Mangalore, you got Kollur. And it's kind of a famous temple there, Mookambika. This is where a lot of artists and musicians go to get blessings of this powerful Devi, this demigoddess, Mookambika, who is said to be a triple incarnation of Lakshmi, Saraswati, and Parvati. So she's there in a very powerful, full lotus, golden form. And all these famous people, you know, come for blessings to become expert and successful in their field. So in this village, Kollur, there is one Brahmin family, and they're called the Hegdes. The Hegdes. It's Vishwambar Hegde and his family, and it's called Hegde Mat. So we would come down off the mountain and come into the village, Kollur, and he was a safe place to take prasad because he was Paka Brahmin, and he just used pure vegetarian ingredients and not even any onions or garlic. He was really good. At least not for us, he didn't use it. Because he knew us. He knew us Westerners, and he knew ISKCON. So we were taking prasad. So for 30 rupees, you could eat with the Hegdes, right? You just give them that dakshin, and they give you a nice leaf plate meal. So one day I was taking a meal with the Hegdes. And, you know, outside there's garden, and, you know, they're growing their own food, and then there's a cow and a calf, and very idyllic, you know? Okay, cell phones in their off position, seat backs in their upright position, tray tables. Thank you for choosing Goloka Airways. We know you have a choice. Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. You've chosen to go back to Godhead. Congratulations. That joke is funny once. Please turn off your electronic devices. Okay, so we're taking prasad in Hegde's Mutt, this little home temple. And then I, out of the corner of my eye, while I'm eating with my hands off this leaf plate, you know, I was thinking, oh, this is very Vedic, you know. I see this blue light out of the corner of my eye, and I thought, what's this? So I looked down, and way at the other end of the house, in the corner of the kitchen, there's a television. There's a television. And the guy's got satellite TV, you know, MTV. So, and you know what he's watching? Well, now I'm dating myself, but there was a famous comedian, a lady comedian in the 30s, 40s, 50s. She had a TV show, I Love Lucy. This lady's name was Lucille Ball. And I Love Lucy reruns were on the MTV. You know, they're watching decades-old sitcom shows. It was like, what? I Love Lucy in this pristine setting, you know, at the Hegde's Mutt. And I thought, wow, what the British couldn't do in 200 years, satellite TV has done in 20 years. It's completely spoiled, even the ether over, you know, South India. And then I go outside after having this nice meal with my family, and I look in the back, and sure enough, there's the satellite dish. Holy smoke. So Kali Yuga is all pervading, and the only way to to protect ourselves from Kali Yuga is to follow the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, his life, teachings, mood, and mission. So the whole tenor of the vibration of Kali Yuga is that you are this body. So go for it. Or don't worry, you know, there's no karma attached to this, because I bet they know this in India. Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Do they sing that in India too? Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. It's a dream. And Prabhupada said, they say life is but a dream, these Mayavadis. It's all Maya. But Prabhupada says they're very expert in trying to enjoy the dreamland. They take it very seriously, right? So that's not the mission of life, is to simply indulge the senses until you just become a bitter old person, because you get diminishing returns on indulging material senses. That's why people don't grow up in a materialistic culture. They just grow old. They don't become wise. They just become bitter and disappointed. So human life is a mission. So Prabhupada, to walk into hedonistic America, the capital of sense gratification, and to talk about, you know, the disciplines of bhakti and getting a higher taste and the mission of human life. Mission? What's that? Come on. Just do your own thing, man. Just do it. If it feels good, do it. It was nothing short of miraculous that Prabhupada did that. So how to find our mission in the mission? Because after all, we're all the same in one sense. We're all human beings. But we're all very different. We have different spirits, different natures. So that's best done in the company of serious and sincere devotees who are pursuing the true mission of human life and want to perfect their life's offering to Srila Prabhupada. So it takes, ideally, it takes good parents who can set you off on a spiritual footing. Most of the time we don't have that, at least in America. And then it takes good teachers who can also help you identify your dominant mode, guna, nature, so you can engage that gross and subtle matter in Krishna's service. It takes spiritual masters who really know us. Come on in. To really know us, who know our name, right? Who know our nature, who can engage that nature in Krishna's service, so we can become all that we can be for Prabhupada and Krishna. I told this morning how in Prabhupada's time, one sannyasi wrote Prabhupada complaining that such and such sannyasi, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he's not sending any money to your BBT, book fund or temple building fund. Of course, the complaining sannyasi, he was sending lakhs and crores of money. That was his, you know, that was his strength. He could collect a lot of money and help build Vrindavan and Mayapur. And he's complaining to Prabhupada about some other sannyasi who isn't doing that. So Prabhupada wrote back a letter and he said, don't you think the spiritual master knows his disciples and how to differently engage them? It's not the duty of this particular person you're complaining about to do that. He's building a rural community. I've given him another set of orders and challenges. So we have to know, from with the help of our spiritual masters, Diksha and Shiksha, gurus, how to engage our energy in Krishna's service. And how will they know how to advise us unless we have a relationship with them? It takes a sampradaya to raise a sadhaka. It takes a village to raise a child. It takes a community of devotees to help us understand really who we are in Prabhupada's mission, and to engage that nature and that spirit in Krishna's service, in the service of the Hare Krishna movement. So that's the mission. So first of all, we have to understand we're not this body. That's the first thing. That's the first thing I ever heard Prabhupada say. I joined his movement in July 70. It wasn't until July 71 that I saw him face to face I was living in New Vrindavan. We drove up to Detroit, which was the closest place Prabhupada was passing through. And, it was typical airport greeting. I mean, this is pre-9/11, so it was those days, as you've seen the films and you've heard the memories, how we just took over the airport. You know, you couldn't even imagine it. I mean, we just turned the airport into a kirtan mela, you know. And so Prabhupada's plane was late. He was coming in from L.A. So the suspense was building. We could hardly stand it, you know. And then his plane finally landed. And then he must have been the last one off the plane because still no Prabhupada. So many people came through the gate. No Prabhupada. And then I knew Prabhupada must be in our midst because I started seeing devotees just bowing down en masse. Just phalanxes of devotees just hitting the floor, you know. And the businessmen are there with their attaché cases and, you know, they're kind of like aghast at what's going on here. And then it happened to me because I saw, oh, there's this divine grace floating up the escalator. Right? And he did float. I've got a few God brothers, and we call ourselves the Floaters Club, because we swear that Prabhupada was floating. And then he just, when he got to the top of the escalator, he just floated across the carpet and hopped up on another airport Vyasasana. So what was the first thing after Prabhupada? Well, what happened was roaring kirtan, Prabhupada joined in, and then still during the kirtan, oh no, it came to a close, all of a sudden you hear, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramhamsa Paribrajaka. He does the Prema Dhvani prayers. And then what did Prabhupada say? What's the first thing he said? So the cause of all suffering is due to misidentification with this material body. Something we heard over and over again, but Prabhupada said it with such depth of realization, we all went, wow. And we went wow again when someone handed Prabhupada a big tray of sweets and fruit. And then Prabhupada, he just like a bird, he just picked a sweet ball like a Simply Wonderful, and he threw it in his mouth. Just threw it from far away, and we all went, wow. And then there was a crumb on his lips, and I was sitting right about here, so I saw Prabhupada take his tongue and just sort of flick it in his mouth like a cow. Prabhupada's mouth always reminded me of a cow's mouth because it's so rich, it's so big, and, you know, it's beautiful. And he just took his tongue and flicked it in. And then someone handed him a silver chalice, and from way high above his mouth, he poured the water in his mouth, you know, and again we went, wow. So, what do we say every morning at Guru Puja? Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitte Te Kuriya Aikya. My only wish is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from his lotus mouth. And then what do we say? Chakudan Diloje Janme Janme Prabhu Se. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. He is my Lord, birth after birth. Number one, do we even know what we're saying? Are there any Bengalis in the house? Bengalis? Yes, okay. So you know from your native mother tongue, Chakudan Diloje. He opens my darkened eyes and fills my heart with transcendental knowledge. Janme Janme Prabhu Se. He is my Prabhu, my Lord, birth after birth. Janme. Even if we know what we're saying, do we believe it? Or is Prabhupada, now that he's passed away from our vision, now it's 40 years, 2017, 1977, is he fading into the distance of time? Is he becoming a figurehead like the Queen of England? Or, you know, somebody, if that's what a figurehead is, he becomes something from the past. How do we keep Prabhupada fresh in our hearts? By hearing him first and foremost, hearing his life, his teachings, his mood. Human life is a mission. It's such a rare birth. We can't see them, but we're outnumbered by zillions of living entities in this room. It's so rare. His mood, his mission. So I encourage all of you, we just had three lessons this week, and I'm going to be here this week working on my projects and sometimes lunching with devotees. But next weekend we're going to have three more lessons, two on Saturday, one on Sunday. Please come if you can. These are opportunities to get closer to His divine grace. The seminar is Sambandha. We deepen our relationship with Prabhupada. It's Abhideya. We commit more to the mission based on our awakened realization of our foundational relationship with His divine grace. And finally, Prayojana. This next weekend, we're going to do the Prayojana lessons. To love is to cooperate, which is a big challenge in Kali Yuga. This is the age of non-cooperation, the age of disunity, as I'm sure you know, struggling, trying to have a community here. And then that's lesson 8. Lesson 9, fictional Prabhupadas. Interesting title, huh? We identify impersonal and sentimental misconceptions we may have about Prabhupada, and we kick them out. We exorcise them like we might exorcise demons or ghosts. And then finally on Sunday, a week from today, we do the last one. It's called Your Srila Prabhupada. We all have this foundational relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Whatever year we join, whoever our Gurudevs are, whatever country we're from, the unity amidst our diversity in this ISKCON Sangha is our founder Acharya. He provides the unity amidst the diversity. That's why I always tell the devotees when I give the seminars that, look, don't come up to me, don't say, Prabhu, I can't imagine what it's going to be like in ISKCON when the last Prabhupada disciple leaves the planet, as though the not even 5,000 people that Prabhupada initiated, as though that we're the only Prabhupada disciples. No, it's every generation must imbibe Prabhupada's, here's the mantra again, life, teachings, mood, and mission. Why? So we can pass on and expand this legacy. So the whole world can take advantage of the path Prabhupada opened wide to transcend birth and death. This movie that was just talked about, this new Prabhupada documentary, I had the good fortune to go to Sedona, Arizona on June 3rd, Saturday, and see it, the world premiere. Wow! This documentary has the power, has the Shakti, to actually endear Prabhupada to the whole world. It's so well done. It's the perfection of Yadavar and Vishaka's, you know, 45-year career as cinematographers, as transcendental cinematographers. So that's a wake-up when you see that movie. And in that theater, there's only 115 seats in that little tiny world premiere theater in Sedona. And about half the seats were devotees. And it was just amazing, the response from everybody in the theater. Prabhupada was so cool. You know, he was so endearing. He was so powerful. He was so everything. You know, he was all-sighted. And by the end of the movie, you know what they were showing? They were showing clips of Prabhupada roaring, preaching like a lion. You know, he was in India. He was scolding his fellow Indians. You know, this is the land of Krishna, and you're running away from him. You know, he's roaring. But by that time, you'd seen Prabhupada, the depth of his compassion and the bravery to come alone, you know, with no friends or money or anything. So you were ready to hear Prabhupada's sauce, his thunder. And you weren't just thinking, oh, he's a Swami and he's yelling, he's angry. What did that? No, you were, wow. Go, Prabhupada. Go. Tell it like it is. So I encourage you to see that movie when it comes to town. It's very powerful. We're trying to get it in Tucson too. So how am I doing? Okay. I go to 6? No, 5:45. Okay. So that's the advertisement. I confess this is an advertisement to come to the seminars next week. The following infomercial was brought to you by Sureshwara Das. No, brought to you by Srila Prabhupada. Okay, thank you very much. Here I am sentimentally inviting you because I'm not giving you practical information. It's in the Darshan room. It's 10:30 to 12:30 on Saturday is the first lesson, and then we break for lunch, and then 2 to 4. 10:30 to 12:30, 2 to 4. It's electronically. It should be, if you're on the newsletter or whatever they send out. Okay, and there should be posters around here somewhere. Okay. So maybe you didn't even know about it. I mean, we had pretty thin attendance. I was blaming it on the weather Saturday, but maybe just didn't know, because I understand it's summer. Everybody's traveling and doing a million things. But please take advantage and come closer to Prabhupada. And Sunday, it's again 10:30 to 12:30. And then I give the Sunday feast talk again. So, thank you for listening. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.